This is a No Double Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Laura Elizabeth, founder of Design Academy, based in Virginia, here in the US. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
To start off, Laura, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, so I'm a designer by trade. So I've been a designer for the last 8 years or so. And I was a freelance designer working for clients. And over the last 2 years, I've kind of taken that knowledge and I've turned it into a company where I help developers who think they're rubbish at design. I help them realize that they're not rubbish at design and how to teach them how to actually become fairly proficient at design. So that's my that's what I do.
But I'll say to you, I am rubbish at design, and you know, why should I do anything about it?
Well, it's a good question. And so I don't actually think developers have to learn design. The reason I actually teach developers is because back when I was freelancing, developers were always my favorite clients. I absolutely loved working with developers. They had fantastic ideas. They were great to work with. They obviously knew all the technical stuff, so we didn't have to worry about that. And they really appreciated good design. And what I noticed about these developers is they all had so many ideas for side projects that they wanted to take on. And they felt really stuck because they thought, well, I've got the ideas. I know how to do all the technical stuff that a lot of people don't know how to do, but I feel like I'm really let down by the design aspect of it. And, you know, when you're starting a side project, you don't really have the resources to hire anyone. Maybe you work full time in-house and you're just doing something on the side. Maybe you're doing something open source that you don't really want to invest money into yet. And I think increasingly now people are starting to really expect decent design with most products. You're kind of seeing it more and more with, you know, startups that have fantastic design just from the outset. It seems a little bit more mandatory these days. And a lot of developers I speak to are really stuck with that. And so I think from a developer's perspective, learning a little bit about design, if you are going down that route of side projects, is really, really handy. It's going to help you get your product out there. And hopefully, you know, if you want to monetize it, you can monetize it. But even if you're not looking to create a product for yourself, a lot of developers work with designers. And one thing that they really struggle with is things like communicating with designers. When designers give them something, they don't really know what to look for and they don't know how to implement it. Or maybe the designer gives them something and as they're, you know, coding it, they realize they don't have everything they need and they don't necessarily have time to go back to the designer and get a new asset. So having a little bit of knowledge there as to how to make something look decent until maybe a designer can come in and, you know, figure out the best solution is just going to be really handy for a lot of developers. But, you know, I don't think every developer has to learn design, but there are definitely some advantages there.
Now, I can see in my own roles, not necessarily this one, but in previous ones, where if I were able to throw together a UI that looked half decent, I would have been able to present it to people to get feedback and speed up my cycle of development, but I couldn't.
Yeah, it makes such a difference. I mean, I'm kind of so grateful that I know how to design because it comes in handy a lot. Even when you're doing things like, say, you're doing a conference talk and you need to put together a slide deck or, you know, anything, any kind of presentation. There's a lot of design that's just really handy to be able to do. And it doesn't have to be spectacular. It just has to look just good. It just has to look not bad. So that's really handy skill to have.
When you bring up a slide deck here, I thought you were referring to things like beautiful HTML and CSS and the like, but are you talking much more broadly about design?
So really normally when I talk about design, I'm talking about it from, you know, like a more technical perspective, like from a product design or a website design. But once you know some of the principles of design, you can pretty much apply it to anything. Like you can apply this stuff to a slide deck. And I know there's so many conferences out there where so many developers speak, and the likelihood of you at some point in your career needing to put together a slide deck is pretty high. And you can actually use some of these principles with anything. You can use it with a slide deck. You could use it in print design if you wanted to. You know, obviously there's nuances there, and you know, I'm not saying that if you know how to design a website, you're going to know how to send a brochure to a printer. But in terms of just making something look visually pleasing, it's pretty interchangeable.
It's an interesting point. On a personal note, I published a Pluralsight course earlier this year, and I've been presenting on the topic at some small conferences. And the feedback I have received was, wow, very polished PowerPoint. And to me, it didn't feel that, but having done the course, I was forced to produce high quality PowerPoint slides with nice animations, with nice transitions. And to me, again, it seemed relatively straightforward. But of course, if I look back at the PowerPoints I used to make a few years ago, they were terrible.
Yeah, exactly. I guess sometimes you don't realize how sometimes you can kind of create something that looks decent and you don't necessarily know that you've actually learned how to do that until you look back. I've had the exact same thing. I kind of get it the opposite way though, where I do something and I'm like, oh, this looks really great. I love this. And then a year later, I look back and I think, oh, what was I thinking? This looks awful. So it's interesting to see how far you can come, even if you're not specifically setting out to learn design.
But let's say now you want to teach a developer some design, or a developer wants to learn for themselves. Where do we even start?
Yeah, so starting is the hardest part. And I really think before you start to learn how to design, you really need a bit of a mindset change. So you need to understand that this is something that you can do. And I honestly think developers often make the best designers, because they are, you know, they know the technical side. They have a very interesting view of the product and how it works. This is just in my personal experience, knowing developers and working with developers. They're very in tune to good UX, bad UX, and it's stuff that's really important to them. They care about things like accessibility and all this stuff that, you know, a lot of even designers don't really understand. And the best products aren't just the prettiest products. The best products are the most well-rounded products that have all this in. And I think developers really have a very broad knowledge of, you know, how it, you know, how a product should work and how it should function and how it should look, but they struggle with the how it should look part. So in terms of starting, one thing I really recommend is start. I'm actually going to talk about it from a marketing website perspective, just because it's a little bit easier to get the point across. But you really need to start with something that's not a design program or anything to do with design. So start with a Google Doc. So start writing the content. And this is something that I do and I teach in my course, actually, is there is an awful lot of design that you will be doing before you even get into designing. So, for example, say you're writing a marketing website and you've got a Google Doc. Well, Google Docs have all these preset headings. So they have heading one, heading two, heading three, heading four. They have bold, italic, they have bullet points, they have numbers, they have all these different formatting things. And when you're writing your marketing website, if you put a tiny bit of thought into how you're formatting this document, you're actually making a lot of design decisions there and then. So, you know, you're saying, okay, I need a big heading here, and then maybe I need a smaller subheading here. Maybe this should be an intro paragraph, and, you know, Google automatically says an intro paragraph is a, you know, bigger font size than the body text. Maybe I need some bullet points, and you have three bullet points, which can, you know, when you translate that to a design, that could be created in numerous different ways. It could be three boxes across the page. It could be three points, you know, one underneath each other with some kind of graphic or a screenshot next to them. It could just be three bullet points. It really could be anything. But there's an awful lot of design that you can do in a Google Doc. And one thing that I really, really like about that is often the hardest part for a developer or even a designer is just starting. And if you can start with something super low fidelity and not scary, it gets you really far. So what I do at that point is, once I've got the Google Doc, depending on what tool you use, some developers might just go straight to HTML and CSS. That's totally fine. I personally still use Photoshop. I've used it for like the whole time I've been a designer. So I'm pretty, you know, in there with that. So you can use Sketch, you know, whatever you use, it doesn't really matter, but just get that Google Doc into whatever you're going to be designing with and just start making those styles that Google's already given you on the in your, you know, design app of choice. And what's really interesting about that is once you've done that, you theoretically have a landing page. It might not be anything special, but you do have one. And I have legitimately seen people who have had landing pages that are Google Docs that have converted very, very, very well. So there's a lot to be said for basic formatting on a page. But what I really like about this is once you've got something there, once you've got a landing page that you can work with, you can then look at that and you can then tweak it. So you can actually start designing, but you've already got a finished piece. So you don't have to worry about finishing everything because it's finished. It's as finished as you can launch it like that if you wanted to, and then just keep tweaking it. So I actually have a sort of theory on designing, and I hope I'm not going too far off track here, which is when a lot of developers are designing, I think the best thing to do is think about design in terms of the same way you'd think about when you're coding. So say you're working on an app or something, and you work on this app, and you know at the end of when you've got something sort of finished, you know that you're going to have to test it, and you know that there are going to be bugs in it, right? I don't think I've ever met any developer who thinks that they just go from start to finish and they write this app and then it just works. They know that it's not going to work. But they kind of factor that in, and they go back and they find the problems, then they tweak them, and then they change them. And what's really cool is that you can use that same mentality with design. So accept that the first design that you're going to do is probably going to look really basic. It's probably going to look bland. You might hate it completely, but that's totally normal. All my designs start like that. But then the trick is to just go back and keep tweaking and changing and debugging the design. And that kind of mentality is just a huge help I found when designing.
But I'd say it's probably one thing for you as the designer to go back and look at it and tweak it and change it. But it'd be a very different thing if you brought someone in who's never seen it before, because they don't necessarily know how to use it, what the buttons are for, where to click. So how do you know once you've got a bit of a site if it's any good or not? More objectively, yeah, than I'm tweaking it and I'm a little bit happier.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you can usually get pretty far on your own with knowing whether this is something that works. So, you know, at the start, all you have to do is you have to look at the website as a user. Can you navigate around it? Do you actually have any buttons in there? Because obviously a Google Doc doesn't have a button, which is something I didn't cover. So, you know, if you need a button, put a button in. Is it kind of roughly, you know, in the right place? I think most developers can get that far knowing that something, a landing page makes sense, a landing page is usable. Of course, if you're not sure, you can always ask people. So just show someone the website. Don't ask them about the design. The design isn't important, but ask them, do they understand what this is telling you? And ask them, what is it telling you? What action do you think that I want you to perform on this website? You know, because usually if it's a landing page, it's something like enter your email address because you want updates, or maybe enter your email address for a free course, or, you know, maybe they want you to just download the product straight away. Whatever it is, there should be an action there. So you want to ask people, do you understand what this is? And do you understand what to do from this page? And if they can answer those two questions, then you're on the right track. If they can't, you need to figure out how to actually make that happen. But does that kind of answer your question? Because I wasn't sure, were you talking about the usability perspective or more of the visual?
Either, really, because, you know, if you spend all day looking at something, you think it's fine and you think it's functional, but of course you introduce it to someone who's never seen it before, they'll have a very different perspective on it.
Yes, exactly. That's very true. So I honestly stand by sleeping on it is the best thing that you can do. Come back to it with fresh eyes, and you know, to be honest, it's really a skill that you're going to have to, as a developer, even if you're not learning design, it's something you're going to have to figure out how to put yourself in a user's shoes. And basically, you're giving your best guess as to what is the best solution for this. You know, say you've got, you're creating a website, it's a small website, you don't have the traffic or the means to do any kind of A/B testing. You're literally just guessing. So, you know, sleeping on it, taking a break is a really good way. But like I said, asking other people, do they understand it, is really helpful, because especially if you're on a call with them. So one thing that I found really useful when I was working with clients was I had a mastermind. So every 2 weeks, me and a few peers, there was a developer and then a, you know, a product creator. We'd get together and we'd talk about random stuff. And if you have people like this, maybe they're people in your company, maybe you have a mastermind, or maybe they're just your family. I don't know. If you've got someone that you can actually be on a call with and show them the website and watch them and listen to them as you go, that's going to really help you figure out where you're going wrong. And you can tweak it from there. So just use what they're saying and tweak it from there until you get to the stage where you can actually do proper testing.
But I imagine it must be hard, though, to get feedback that's actionable sometimes, because someone might look at something and say, well, it sucks. But how do you know what part sucks and how do you know what to fix?
Yeah. So it's kind of different if we're talking about the visuals versus the, you know, the messaging and the content. Do you have a preference as to which one I speak to, or should I just do a bit of both?
Give us a bit of both, please.
Okay. So if someone just says, this sucks. the first thing you want to do is ask why. So, you know, what about it sucks? Is it that you don't understand the product? Is it that you don't really get why this is being made? Is it that you don't think it's useful? Is it just because that you're not the target audience and you have no idea what any of these terms mean? This is all really useful information to have, because you really want to figure out, is there something wrong with the actual messaging, or have I just asked the wrong person? So if it's something super technical for a very specific audience, and you're going to have a lot of terms in there that a certain group of people will understand, you don't want to ask your dad or your mom or something, unless they're in that field. You want to ask someone who's going to understand those, or else it's going to be a little bit pointless. From a visual perspective, it gets a little bit harder. So from a visual perspective, if someone says it sucks, the difficult part is that the visual part is pretty subjective. So if I show someone a website and I say, what do you think of the design? What do you think of how this looks? And they say, I don't like it. You can kind of dig a little bit deeper and figure out why they don't like it. But ultimately, the way it looks, they're probably talking about something to do with the branding. And if they're your specific target audience, you can dig deeper and figure out, is there an issue with the branding? Is it, you know, is my branding dumbing down this particular subject? Is it making it kind of fun when it's not really a fun subject? Is there something actually wrong with the branding, or do you just not like it because it's not your personal preference? And so that's a lot harder. So I usually prefer, when I'm talking from a visual perspective, not to actually ask people, do you like the way it looks? Because it's usually not too helpful. I actually prefer to try to figure this out for myself. So say you're designing something for a particular audience. First off, you want to figure out what kind of styles appeal to this particular audience, if there is any. You know, there might not be a particular style that appeals to a particular audience. But to give you an example, say I'm doing a music app for 20 to 30 year olds. It's very likely that kind of, if you look at other music apps or other companies targeting that particular age group, that it's going to be quite maybe colorful, maybe a bit edgy. Maybe it's going to have kind of styling things there that you can take into account. But if you're doing, you know, a kind of a SaaS, there might not be. To be honest, it might not matter exactly what kind of styling is there. So when you're the way I work is when I'm working from a visual perspective, I want to get as far as I can with the visuals, either on my own or with my small team as possible. Because the more people you introduce to the visuals, the more kind of clouded you get, because people are just giving their own opinions on what they personally like. I like pink, I like blue, I like squiggly lines, and it's not really too helpful. And so when you're looking at something and you can't decide whether it's, you know, you think, I don't think this looks good, and I don't know why. Really the best thing that I would recommend doing is as simple as looking at as many other websites, preferably not the same, not your competitors, not the same industry as you, that you like, and just trying to figure out what you like about them and what you don't like about yours. And something that I do even to this day, I'll take a website that I really like. And a great resource, by the way, for websites is a website called land-book.com. And there's another one called lapa.ninja, which is just two kind of places that I go for inspiration. I've got a big iMac, so I can have that open on one side, and then I'll have my website open on another. And I'll just kind of look and I'll say, okay, I like this one. I don't like mine. Why do I like this? Why do I not like mine? You'll just instantly be able to see things like, you know, this one, there's a lot more breathing room from start to finish. This one, they've used a really bright color, but they've used it very sporadically. Whereas in mine, I've used a really bright color, but I've used it, it's too much. I need to tone down the color a bit. And just being able to see these two things side by side and just, you know, looking at them and trying to figure out why you like this, why you don't, is a really good way to just slowly go through and debug your design.
I had a lady from Microsoft on, Rachel Appel. She's one of the content developers or designers for ASP.NET on a podcast. It was episode 64 about accessibility. And she made the comment that a more accessible site is always better for everybody, irrespective of disabilities or anything of that nature. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think accessibility is something that's really important, but also it's becoming more and more, I guess, mainstream, which is a really good thing. So I remember when I first started designing, everything that I saw was using. So we had this thing, I think the color contrast thing is always a really easy example to use as accessibility, where designers were always mocked because they'd use super light gray, thin, what, you know, 100 weight text as all their titles. And it would fail all the contrast checkers and it would just be completely miserable to read. But designers would be like, oh, it looks great. I think now, from what I've seen, especially in the, you know, the tech world, I think accessible websites are becoming a lot more mainstream. And, you know, it's, I don't like to talk too much on it specifically, because I kind of know my own ignorance in terms of accessible websites. I read a few books on it, but the subject is actually huge. And the more you kind of get into accessibility, the more you realize there is, you know, from things like, you know, being able to access everything from your keyboard to, you know, being able to make sure that a screen reader can read the website and you've not got random emojis in there that are causing loads of issues, or just, you know, things like that. There really is a lot to think about. And I do agree that accessibility is really important. But I also think it's quite hard, and it's actually something I'm personally struggling with and trying to get better at, knowing what to do and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I do agree with that statement. I don't think anyone could disagree with it. The more accessible a website, the better. It just makes a lot of sense. And especially, you know, when we go from, you know, we've got so, you know, if you think about things like screen sizes, you know, we go from like an iMac to an Apple Watch. That's really hard to design for all those kinds of things. And if we're kind of thinking accessibility first, you know, keep it super simple, you know, think about this stuff rather than the kind of prettiness, you know, that's going to make your job easier as well when you're trying to design for all these different devices. So yeah, I do agree with that. And it's something that I personally want to get a lot better at.
What would you say, though, are the most common problems that designers, or let's say developers who are becoming designers, hit as they make their way into the field?
Yeah, I think so. When you're thinking of, when I'm thinking of in terms of product design, what I notice a lot of developers that I work with, mistakes that they make is that this is kind of a good thing and a bad thing, right? So developers think about every single possible use case that someone could need. And that's really good. That's definitely completely a good thing. However, what will tend to happen is they'll put all these different use cases on the same screen and it'll all just kind of be everywhere because they're all needed. And they won't really think about how this is going to look and to people who just come on this for the first time. So I work with a lot of developers still, and I, to be honest, I actually encourage them to do this now because I can kind of take over and work with them to figure out how to make it more usable. But if you're not working with a designer and you're just doing this on your own, one of the most important things is to absolutely start by getting everything that you need right there. I think that's absolutely the best way to go. But don't just stop there. Try to figure out how can we make this interface so that the main tasks that people are going to want to do are really easy to do. The tasks that some people are going to want to do are, you can find them, but they're not necessarily front and center. So, you know, what are some different patterns that you can use to make that happen? So, you know, honestly, the best way to do that is to just try to sketch different ideas, use different apps and see what they're doing. I find it's much easier to work with at least one other person if you can and try to brainstorm ideas with them than trying to do this kind of thing on your own, because it's really hard. But that's a kind of big mistake I see developers specifically make. And in that same vein, I think typography is something that's you can do an awful lot with, that I think if a lot of developers knew a little more about things like hierarchy and typography, there's an awful lot you can do with that in terms of simplifying an interface. So think about when you're, you know, you've got some text in front of you, say you've got a box and it's got a bunch of different things in. What's the most important thing that you need to see? Okay, should this be the biggest? Should it be bold? Should it be a darker color? Should it be, you know, how much does this need to stand out? This is secondary information. So how can we visually make it so it looks like secondary information? Do we make it a slightly lighter color? Do we make it smaller? And you don't necessarily have to do all these things. Like, the most important thing doesn't have to be big, bold, and dark. It can be two of those things. The secondary thing doesn't have to be small, light, and, you know, a regular weight. You know, you can kind of mix and match these things. And I think, you know, it's kind of hard on a podcast because I can't specifically show you what I mean. But I think as you look through different websites and different apps that you like, really look at the typography, because there is so much in design website and an app, pretty much just using typography in a few lines for most things. And there's so much that you can do in the design with the typography. And I'm not going to say it's easy. It's the hardest subject to get right. It's all throughout when I was in college and university, every single teacher said to me, it's great, the typography needs work. It's not easy, but it's really important. So they're kind of the biggest things. I think if developers focus on typography and simplifying without getting rid of needed features, well on their way to being fantastic designers.
So if I'm making my way through that checklist, and I'm fixing, you know, typography, and I'm fixing the fonts, and I'm fixing the colors, and I'm fixing the other things, and I keep fixing and tweaking and fixing and tweaking, how do I know if I'm done?
That's a good question. So you're never really done, especially when you're in the world of products, because what's going to happen is you're gonna launch something, and then people are going to use it, and then you're going to get feedback, change it. So you're never really done, but at some point you have to launch. And I can't really say at what point that needs to be. That depends on so many things. Like, you know, if you're working, say, for example, you're working in a company and you have specific guidelines that you need to make sure happens, you've probably got like a pretty decent checklist of what you need to do in order for something to be done. Okay, that's a little bit easier because you're in a big company, there's more procedures there. If you're doing something on your own, I would honestly advise launch as quickly as possible, and, you know, continue to tweak after that. And if you've got something that looks half decent, you can stop there if you want to. You don't have to make everything look like a award-winning website. It's much more important to launch it and get feedback and tweak it. Because honestly, if you spend too long on the design, it's going to be really frustrating when you find out you've got to change it because there's some huge thing that you missed. And I say that from personal experience. So launch quickly. Don't worry too much about tweaking it too much. Unless you are doing it because you want to become a better designer. If you're doing it because you want to be a better designer, then just keep tweaking it. Just keep going. Don't stop. Like, see what happens. You know, maybe you'll do something and you'll make it worse, but you can always go back. Because that's really what's going to teach you how to design. If you don't want to learn how to design, you just want to make something look decent, stop at the soonest point that you think it looks decent and try to get feedback, because you're going to have to come back and tweak at some point anyway, as long as it makes sense. And like we were talking about earlier, you get someone to use it, and if they understand it, you're good.
Very sound advice. And speaking of finishing, any final notes before we wrap up for the evening, Laura?
No, I think that's kind of covered everything. I feel like I've chewed your ear off a bit, but
if people want to find your websites, where do we go?
You can go to designacademy.io. That's where you can find a ton of free resources, articles about learning design. I have a free email course in there that kind of teaches you the 6 main principles of design. So we go through typography, color, you know, all this stuff, and you can kind of go start to finish with a design and see how far you get. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Fantastic. Laura Elizabeth, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 27 with Deb Bigger on the importance of user experience, or episode 8 with Brian O'Neill on good design and software. The opening music was Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Hum OK by Gable from the album Le Sac de l'Enfer 1.